welcome to Between the Margins on CHRW 94.9 FM. I'm Michelle Boyce.
I'm Deborah Hamza.
And this is a show about human rights and people's pursuit of happily ever after. Now, we've been doing this show for quite a while here now, and we have never actually defined what human rights are. We haven't talked about the Human Rights Commissions. We haven't talked about the Criminal Code of Canada. And we haven't talked about the International Declaration of Human Rights, which is a huge remiss on our part, seeing how we've been on the air for so long talking about these particular issues. So today, that's what we're going to do. We're going to go over it all for you, go over why we have human rights. We're going to talk about some of the controversy that's happening within Canada and within opposition to having human rights commissions and human rights. And we're going to talk about all of the stuff that, quite frankly, we should have talked about a long time ago on this show.
A long time ago.
So, and the reason that came to my attention was January 14th, so just a couple of days ago, there was an article written which annoyed me to the end of the planet. And I got to say that, you know, I get my back up quite a bit when it comes to human rights. I do this 80 hours a week. I'm a diversity trainer, so I train on these issues. I'm the executive director of a community center that deals with these issues and the human rights commissions on a daily basis. And I see this stuff, and I get like thousands of emails through my desk every single day from around the world on all of the issues. But this one really, really irked me. And the heading is, Canadian Human Rights Tribunal awards cop killer $9,500.
Doesn't seem like very much money.
Well, it's not much money, but I mean, at first glance, you know, and the purpose of this article is because it was written by someone who's trying to dismantle human rights. So, you know, it's a sensationalistic heading, and, you know, when it bleeds, it leads, and this one bleeds a lot. So they're going for the sensationalistic aspect. But when you read into the article is about a gentleman who is doing time in a penitentiary for killing a cop.
And he's disabled.
So he's been tried, he's been convicted, and he's in jail for that crime. This is no longer an issue. But while this disabled gentleman is in jail, they've decided that they need to count inmates. And to count inmates, one must stand to be counted. This gentleman is disabled. He's unable to stand for any period of time without excruciating pain. And the prison failed to accommodate his need to stay laying down to be counted, which has absolutely nothing to do with the horrific crime that this person committed.
But that's what the article focuses on.
Yes, the article focuses on the cop killer, which is horrible. And he's in jail, and that's probably where he belongs. But that doesn't mean that he doesn't have human rights. And my question is, what would the headline say if the tribunal awarded a petty theft that stole an automobile $9,500?
It would totally look different.
Exactly. So, I mean, this person here is trying to make some correlation between someone's value as a human being and the crimes that they may have committed, which they're all in jail for. I mean, that's not the issue. The issue is, they simply power tripped on this individual, and even though there's medical testimony, there's all kinds of backup for this. I mean, you don't win a tribunal human rights case without backup. So this individual was day in and day out harassed and discriminated against because of his disability. He stood up for his rights, and he won his case.
Yeah, he did, but he had to go through a lot to win that case. I think I remember reading in that article that the nurse said he wasn't, that he could stand, and then he was seen by a doctor. The doctor said, no, he can't stand, he's disabled, but then the prison got the doctor to change his mind.
Exactly, and that was part of the case, whereby, and this happens in human rights cases all of the time, whereby you have medical testimony backing up a human rights case, and the company, the service provider, the organization that is the subject to the human rights bullies that testimony so that that person doesn't have as strong a case. So that's what happened in this case. And this got my backup because, well, you know, I'm really starting to get annoyed at people that are starting to attack human rights commissions for
doing their job.
For doing their jobs, protecting human rights and dignities across this country. And the individuals are the Free Speech Society.
Right. And there's reasons why we have human rights councils and committees to protect people. And they came about years ago.
Yes, they did. And through hard blood, sweat, and tears on the backs of marginalized people that have been harassed and bullied and treated unequally, because I think that's the word here is equality, everyone is equal in the terms of the law. And that means that you don't get to pay a woman less than you pay a man. That doesn't mean that a Muslim man gets paid less than a Christian man. It doesn't mean that a disabled person can't apply for a job. And we have these human rights and these protections to protect these people and to try and bring equality into the scenario.
Right, and we worked really hard for years and years and years to do this.
Exactly. And let's go back to the history, because I think the history is important. And thanks to Youth Human Rights Unlimited, they've put together a piece that goes over the history of human rights. And we're going to play that clip for you now as soon as we figure out which mouse actually works on the table here. There we go. Okay, so this is the history of human rights on Between the Margins on CHRW Radio.
Human rights is, that's a good question.
Human rights.
I don't even know how to give that a definition.
I would probably have to do a little bit of homework or something.
Any right that I think any, just as a normal, you know, human, any...
The rights that humans have?
Oh, this is a very large debate.
We just take them for granted that they're there, but we don't even consider what they are.
Human rights are the rights you have simply because you're human. It's how you instinctively expect and deserve to be treated as a person, like the right to live freely, to speak your mind, and to be treated as an equal. There are many kinds of rights. Most apply to a certain group. But human rights are the only ones that apply to absolutely everyone, everywhere. That means kids, old people, poor people, basketball players, garbage men, rappers, teachers, Africans, Indians, Albanians, Christians, Muslims, Kabbalists, atheists, your mom, your dad, your next door neighbor, and you all have the exact same human rights. In other words, they're universal. But the question remains, what are they?
Name human, the human rights?
What the human rights are?
The right to live,
equality between all peoples.
Right to religion, the right to...
Is there supposed to be a list somewhere I should be aware of?
According to the United Nations, there are a total of 30 human rights, which are usually lumped together and called simply human rights. They're all listed out in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which is the world's most widely accepted document on the subject. but it was a long time in coming. At first, there were no human rights. If you were in with the right crowd, you were safe. If you weren't, well, you weren't. But then a guy named Cyrus the Great decided to change all that. After conquering Babylon, he did something completely revolutionary. He announced that all slaves were free to go. He also said people had the freedom to choose their religion, no matter what crowd they were a part of. He documented his words on a clay tablet known as the Cyrus Cylinder. And just like that, human rights were born. The idea spread quickly to Greece, to India, and eventually to Rome. They noticed that people naturally followed certain laws, even if they weren't told to. They called this natural law, but it kept getting trampled on by those in power. Not until 1,000 years later in England did they finally get a king to agree that no one can overrule the rights of the people, not even a king. People's rights were finally recognized, and they were now safe from those in power. Kind of. It still took a bunch of British rebels declaring their independence before the king got the point that all men are created equal. Which isn't to say he liked the idea, but he couldn't stop them, and America was born. The French immediately followed with their own revolution for their own rights. Their list was even longer, and they insisted that these rights weren't just made up. They were natural. The Roman concept of natural law had become natural rights. Unfortunately, not everyone was so thrilled. In France, a general named Napoleon decided to overthrow the new French democracy and crown himself emperor of the world. He almost succeeded, but the countries of Europe joined forces and defeated him. Human rights was again a hot topic. They drew up international agreements, broadly granting many rights across Europe. But only across Europe. The rest of the world somehow still didn't qualify. Instead, they got invaded, conquered, and consumed by Europe's massive empires. But then a young lawyer from India decided enough was enough. His name was Mahatma Gandhi, and in the face of violence, he insisted that all people of Earth had rights, not just in Europe. Eventually, even Europeans started to agree. But it wasn't going to be that easy. Two world wars erupted. Hitler exterminated half the Jewish population of Earth in horrifying Nazi death camps. All told, 90 million people died. Never had human rights been so terrifyingly close to extinction. And never had the world been more desperate for change. So the countries of Earth banded together and formed the United Nations. Their basic purpose was to reaffirm faith in fundamental human rights, in the dignity and worth of the human person. But what were human rights? Were they the proclamations of Cyrus, the natural laws of Rome, the declarations of France? Everyone seemed to have a slightly different idea of what human rights should be. But under the supervision of Eleanor Roosevelt, they finally agreed on a set of rights that applied to absolutely everyone. The Universal Declaration of Human Rights. The French concept of natural rights had finally become human rights. So, in summary, at first, only a few lucky people had any rights. Until one of those guys decided, hey, other people should have some rights too. Which was great, except not everyone agreed. And it only took a few thousand years of fighting and declarations and more fighting until everyone finally agreed that human rights should apply to everyone. And they all lived happily ever after. Except for one little problem. If people have the right to food and shelter, why are 16,000 children dying of starvation every day? One every 5 seconds. If people have freedom of speech, why are thousands in prison for speaking their minds? If people have the right to education, why are over 1 billion adults unable to read? If slavery has truly been abolished, why are 27 million people still enslaved today? More than twice as many as in 1800. The fact is, when it was signed, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights did not have the force of law. It was optional. And despite many more documents, conventions, treaties, and laws, it's still little more than words on a page. So the question is, who will make those words a reality?
I have a dream today.
When Dr. King marched for racial equality, he was marching for rights that had been guaranteed by the United Nations for almost two decades. But still, he marched. When Nelson Mandela stood up for social justice in the 1990s, his country had already agreed to abolish such discrimination for almost 40 years. But still, he fought. Those who fight today against torture, poverty, and discrimination are not giants or superheroes. They're people. Kids. Mothers. Fathers. Teachers. Free-thinking individuals who refuse to be silent. Who realize that human rights are not a history lesson. They're not words on a page. They're not speeches or commercials or PR campaigns. They are the choices we make every day as human beings. They are the responsibility we all share to respect each other, to help each other, and to protect those in need. As Eleanor Roosevelt said, where, after all, do universal human rights begin? In small places close to home. So close and so small that they cannot be seen on any maps of the world. Yet they are the world of the individual person, the neighborhood he lives in, the school or college he attends, the factory, farm, or office where he works. Such are the places where every man, woman, and child seeks equal justice, equal opportunity, equal dignity without discrimination. Unless these rights have meaning there, they have little meaning anywhere.
And that's the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Almost six or over 60 years ago, a Canadian, John Humphreys, actually was the primary author of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. And it was set in Paris, and we're now 63 years since that declaration, and I'm still a full-time job fighting to get these rights implemented across Canada.
63 years ago, yeah, on December 10th, 1948. That's amazing that we're still fighting for the simple human rights, simple, like you, Michelle and I were going through these. There's 30 of them here, simple human rights that everybody should have every day, and we're still fighting for them.
And everybody doesn't understand the context of human rights, because unless you are a white, non-religious male individual with no beliefs, you are protected by the Human Rights Code. There is some marginalization in pretty much every single human being's lives across the board, across the planet. Some people have multiple marginalizations. I mean, myself personally, I'm a woman, I'm a lesbian, I'm disabled, I catch a lot of the human rights, and there's multiple marginalizations, and these all make my life more and more difficult to function on a day-to-day basis, along with everyone else on the planet that faces marginalization. And one of the mistakes that people make is that they compare marginalizations, and they compare, well, this person is worse off because, and that is totally untrue, because when you are marginalized and when you feel that oppression on your shoulders, when you are being oppressed, harassed, discriminated because simply you are who you are, and it's not something you can change.
No, everybody has to be you know, going on an individual basis here. They can't be put all in one box here. I remember back in the early 80s, I was an assistant manager of a company, and the trainee underneath me, he was male, and he was making more money than I was. And I had to take that to the Human Rights Commission, and I ended up winning. But you shouldn't have to do that. It should be, you know, automatically fair.
And I've never had a human rights case that I've been involved with that on the surface you look at it and you say, this is really, really dumb. Why are we fighting for this very basic principle? Why are we fighting because I, as a woman, am doing the exact same job as the person sitting beside me and getting paid 30% less?
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. And you know, you're working the same hours as them, you're doing the same job as them, and you have to fight to make sure you're making the same money as them.
Why does an individual who's in a wheelchair sitting at the same desk beside someone else get paid less?
Yeah.
They're doing the exact same job. They're sitting in a seat the same as the person sitting beside them, but there's a discrepancy of like 50% on wages.
Or they don't get the job because they're sitting in the wheelchair.
Or they don't get the job, or they can't even apply for the job because the human resources department is on the second floor and there's no elevator to get to it.
Yeah, because by law you have to have an elevator now, right?
Right, and you have to have accessible human resources departments, yet many, many companies, I have people that are disabled that are applying for jobs that they circle the building and they circle the building and they can't even get into the interview.
Right, and parking is a problem also, too.
Yeah, and handicapped parking, and, you know, I've got my handicapped parking permit that allows me to park in those little blue spots, but it's a continuous problem that non-handicapped people are taking up the handicap parking because they want the front row parking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they, you know, they're just thinking about themselves, what's more convenient for them.
So human rights are a pretty major ordeal, and we're nowhere near equality. And 60 years after the world has said that human rights are important on a world stage, we're still fighting for the most basic of the human rights. I mean, status of women offices in Canada, our esteemed prime minister, one of the very first things that he did when he came into power was close them.
Oh, definitely. And Irene Matheson, who is our MPP, NDP critic in the federal Ottawa, she is very, very strong for women's rights and the status of women. And she's always trying to put bills in Stephen Harper is just he's just putting us back years and years for the things that he's doing.
Yes, and those status of women's offices, I mean, they were closed because, according to Prime Minister Harper, as I remember the quote, women have equality now.
But that's not true. That's the whole point. That's not true.
And all you have to do is look at heads of corporations and how many of those are women, how many people have authoritative positions within the city government, within politics, within every major corporation and corporate scene. There is a small percentage of women that have any kind of management positions within this country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's still a lot of corporations, it's still the old boys club.
It is. And so we still have people that are trying to dismantle our human rights in this country. And it's a hard-fought battle. And, I mean, women have fought tooth and nail trying to get these rights for this status and everything else, which is unheard of that in this day and age we would have government turning back the clock on those rights. And go ahead.
I was just going to say, years ago, you could walk into the human rights office here in London and, you know, tell them your problem and they'd help work on it right away. Now, it takes months and months and months to even hear back from somebody. You have to send in your complaint and it takes months and months to hear back from somebody.
Exactly. And that was another dismantling of the human rights system. And we're going to talk about the Ontario human rights system when we come back from this break.
We are all in this. Brothers and sisters, we can do better.
back at Between the Margins, and I'm Michelle Boyce.
And I'm Devil Hamza.
And we're talking about human rights and why we have human rights, why we have human rights commissions, and we're going to get into a little bit about free speech a little later on. But first, let's talk about the Ontario Human Rights Commission and what happens when you're discriminated against. Because the rules changed about a year and a half ago. And whereas we used to have a two-column, two-tier type of human rights process where if you had a complaint, you filed it with the Human Rights Commission, and then they moved your case forward to the tribunal for you. Well, our government, in its wisdom, has decided that this is not how it's going to happen these days. So now what happens is now we have a direct access system in Ontario whereby if you're discriminated against, it's your responsibility to file directly with the Human Rights Tribunal without any assistance.
And people do need assistance.
People need, it's a very complex, very complicated procedure. The forms are fairly straightforward to fill out, but they are long and you can make mistakes that can hurt your case right at the beginning when you're filing your human rights case. Now, you can hire legal assistants to take on and help you fill out these forms, but most people that are in the position where they've been in a poisoned work environment, they've lost their job from wrongful dismissal, somebody has been discriminating against, their resources are both feeding their families, not concentrating on an 8-year process for human rights. They don't have the excess disposable income to go out and pay a lawyer to fight for a process that they may get a claim in 8 years for. Mm-hmm. And that brings in the new third column, or the new third wheel of human rights here in Ontario, and that is the Legal Assistance Center.
Neighborhood Legal Services?
Yeah, whereby they will assist you with, similar to legal aid, to help you with your human rights case. But whereas before you filled out the forms and then you got assistance in filing them, now the Legal Support Center won't help you fill out the initial forms. They won't help you until your case has been picked up by the tribunal and you're in the system.
Right. So that these people out there in Ontario who are illiterate or maybe they're blind, I don't know, that they can't fill out these forms, they need help, and so then that puts it onto the community, the social workers or community workers in the community to help people.
Which is where you and I come into this.
It does, yes.
And that puts it on already. I mean, I am totally unfunded. You're funded for a period of your day. Mm-hmm. And both of us work way more hours than we're ever compensated for already. And taking already overworked social workers who are in the trenches day in and day out and expecting us to now act as legal consultants is a little bit much of an expectation.
Oh, definitely it is. Definitely. That's a legal liability also.
So now we're put in a position where our clients have been discriminated against. They've got a wrongful dismissal case. They've lost their job. Their families are starting to go hungry. And we're in the position where we have to fill out the forms for them.
Mm-hmm. And if they're not filled out properly, they get sent back.
Or they just don't get their claim picked up by the tribunal. So what happens when you do actually get your forms and you do get them filled out and you file them, then there's a mediation process that happens. And that is a situation where you have an arbitrator from the Human Rights Tribunal who takes both parties from each side and tries to mediate a settlement, which is an extremely effective tool because most human rights cases, because of the nature of the cases and the fact that the respondents in most human rights cases actually didn't have a clue that they were violating the human rights code when they were doing it, because they're just doing what they've always done. Usually these cases can get resolved in mediation.
Which is a good thing.
Which is a good thing, because that way people get their jobs back, people get back in the workforce, and there's limited cost on both sides of the equation. Because human rights can be extremely expensive on both sides. You can act as your own attorney in human rights, and it's not quite the same as going against a criminal litigation case or a family law case whereby the system is very much leaning towards lawyers. The system within the human rights case is actually fairly friendly for people that want to represent themselves within the system.
Well, that's a good thing, yeah.
So it is a little bit better that way, in that you can work your way through the system, especially if you have an advocate or somebody that can give you some pointers and help you out a little bit. So if you do have a human rights case, I seriously recommend that you either seek out legal counsel, and if you can't afford that, at least seek out a community center, community agency, community organization that works within the human rights system and get someone like Deborah to help you through the system, because it can really help to just have a few pointers.
And my concern is the people that don't speak English that are being discriminated against and feel that they have nowhere to turn.
And that's a huge problem within the system. I mean, the Human Rights Code is translated into a multitude of languages. I mean, they don't have them all covered. But most of the procedures are actually covered in English with translation. So that means that most of the people that are before the tribunal are acting towards or through a translator, which I've done a lot of training and a lot of work through translators, and translators do their best to convey the message that the person is trying to convey, but it's not the same as making your own case in your own language.
No, and sometimes the translator, and I've worked with translators a lot too, and sometimes the translator isn't translating the message properly, and sometimes it could be the right language, but it's a different dialect or something from the country they're from, and it's not coming through properly.
Which is a huge problem. So there's, unfortunately, our government and our wisdom and changing the human rights system has made it extremely difficult now in Ontario to file a human rights case. I mean, you can still file. It's just put all of the burden back on the marginalized person who probably is in distress, because, I mean, typically, these cases are extremely personal, extremely difficult to manage on a day-to-day basis, regardless of whether or not you're filing human rights.
Oh, definitely. And definitely the stress on that person is just enormous.
So, and then we have the Canadian system. And if you're filing a human rights case against an Ontario corporation or a service provider within the province of Ontario, you go to the Ontario Human Rights. But if you're filing with a federally regulated industry, for example, cell phone providers are federally regulated, and I've dealt with a few cases against those type of people, and the federal government, of course, is federally, then you file your case with the Canadian Human Rights Commission, which is still the same as the Ontario system used to be. And there's the Canadian Human Rights Commission that files your paperwork for you and helps you through the system.
Which is a lot better.
It's a lot better. So if you can file federally, you're still far better off, but it's not a choice on your part. It's which jurisdiction has power over whatever person has persecuted against you.
Yeah, and there's a lot of cases. They're really, really backlogged.
They are. And part of this process was supposed to get the backlog out of the system, which it did. It cleared a whole pile of cases. I mean, I had a personal human rights case in the system when they switched over that I abandoned with the changeover in the system, because the paperwork and the bureaucratic burden was just so intense to transfer a case from the old system to the new system that it just wasn't worth it to me to transfer the case. And a huge percentage of cases that were before the commission all took that fact that, you know, I've been fighting this for 4 years, now I have to restart my case and start it all over again, and you know what, I'm just going to abandon this.
So what you're telling me, Michelle, is that the old cases, before they switched over to this new system, they just forgot about, or they just said, well, we're not going to do these, we're just going to start from scratch?
Yep, you had to basically start from scratch and file a new case and continue on and go through the process from the beginning with the tribunal again, and you lost your legal representation of the Human Rights Commission. So you went from a case that was being handled for you to all of a sudden, here's the stack of paperwork, deal with it yourself.
That's outrageous.
I know they delivered to me about 5,000 pages of documents when they wanted me to transfer my own case. It came in a great big huge package, and I had to wade through it all and try and figure it all out on my own. And it was like, here's your case. Here's where it stands now. Go to it, girl.
Wow, that's a lot of work for somebody who doesn't know the legal system like you do.
It was intimidating for me, and I know the system. Mm-hmm. I couldn't even imagine somebody who doesn't know the system. So yeah, the human rights case, and a lot of people think that this human rights mechanism is this huge, easy thing that people go through, and look at all of the settlements that they're getting and all of these hassles that they're putting corporations through. And I tell you, yes, if you've been discriminated, I highly recommend that you go through the system. But nobody is going to go through the system if they haven't got a really good case. The loops and the hoops are just too big to jump through.
Yeah, and that's unfortunate nowadays. They should be a lot easier to go through because, like we said before, these human rights have been out for 63 years. So the system should be a lot easier to access and to go through it.
So one of the things that Human Rights Commission adversaries are talking about, and probably the biggest thing that they talk about, is the human right of free speech. And that's probably the biggest hot potato in Canada today, is the Free Speech Society, which, you know, has newspaper and print gurus like Ezra Levant and Mark Stein and Margaret Wente from The Globe. These major power players within the Canadian human rights scene really think that they should be able to say whatever they want, whenever they want, regardless of who it hurts.
And it does hurt people.
It does. And the advocates of it say that, well, freedom of expression, I want to know what people think so that I can confront them on an equal stage, and I don't want them hiding in the background. I want to know what they're thinking. So this is people that are on the human rights side that think free speech is an absolute, and it's not. In Canada, we do not have absolute free speech rights. Not like the U.S.
No, we don't.
In Canada, your free speech rights are held against responsibility. And I got a short clip for you here about rights and responsibility produced, and it's kind of comical and brings a lighter side to it a little bit.
And moving right along, we have some of your mail to respond to. Alex from Ontario writes, I'm a new immigrant to Canada. Could you please tell me about my rights as a Canadian citizen? That's a good question, Alex. To start off, let's talk about rights. Rights are civil liberties that are so important that they are guaranteed by the state in a document called a Bill or Charter of Rights. Here to tell us about those rights is Canada's own Doctor of Rhyme and Reason. Ladies and gentlemen, the Rhyme Minister.
Thanks, Blake. Alex, That is a good question. And the answer? Well, it goes a little something like this. In Canada and in Ontario, we have a number of important rights, you know. They came into place when we wrote the Charter of Rights and Freedoms and the Human Rights Code. So listen up, because it's important to see about your rights in this place and how to use them properly. And whoa, you got rights. Get to know them. First thing I have to say in the song I wrote is that in Canada you have the right to vote. You can vote for the local government in your city or town, and again when provincial and federal elections come around. So you have a say about your representation in your city and your province and even your nation. And if you look at all the candidates and you're still like no one, next time you even have the right to run. And whoa, you got rights. Whoa, get to know them. That I want to bring up, like legal rights and rights about languages and such. But let me start with the freedom of religion, of conscience, of thought, belief, and of opinion. This means personal freedom and freedom of speech. And don't forget about the rights to equality. If there are times when you think your rights are not being met, you have the right to assemble in peaceful protest or form groups that can associate freely, so you can make sure your rights are respected completely. And whoa, yeah, guys, whoa.
Well, that about sums up our legal rights as guaranteed to us by the government. But we also have responsibilities, the values and practices that we should do our best to follow in our day-to-day lives in Canada. Isn't that right, Prime Minister?
That's true, Blake. With any kind of power comes responsibility, and this is true with rights. So listen to me. When you're a citizen here, you obey the law, and you should take part in the democratic process. There are a few things that you need to respect, like our two official languages and our multicultural heritage. Remember the freedom of speech that I mentioned before. There is something I should add that I should not ignore. Though you can express your opinions all day and night, you should still respect other people's freedoms and rights. And whoa, you got responsibilities, whoa, you get to practice them. One last thing, one final note, remember that you should get out and vote. That's why I am here, to stand up and shout. If you don't like the people in government, you can kick them out. So on election night, be sure to exercise your democratic rights. There is a parliament here, and you get to choose it. But democracy only works if you use it. Oh, you got rights, whoa. Get to know them, whoa. You've got responsibilities, whoa. You get to practice them.
So when we talk about rights, and especially the right of free speech, which is a very important, very, very important part of dialogue and discussion, you don't have to insult someone's characteristics that they can't change when you're having an argument with somebody. I have never had a problem with an individual that I could not address without insulting their heritage, their religion, their... It's just not necessary in discourse with someone to put them down to make your point.
And I agree with you. I run in across that all the time in my job, that people do that. And it's very disheartening that people are doing that nowadays.
And my message to the Free Speech Society is, if you're such a lazy writer that you can't actually make your point without hurting somebody's feelings, maybe you need a new career. But that's just my point. I mean, sensationalistic press aside, I mean, you just don't need to put down an entire race of people to make your point that on any particular topic or a point. So, I mean, in the classroom, and I make this point over and over again when I'm talking about free speech, there's not a parent on this planet that don't teach their kids to go to school and be respectful for all the other kids. Don't say...
There is parents that,
okay,
that do that.
Oh, yes.
We can't say that.
That's right. Okay, responsible parents.
Yes.
Tell their children to go to the playground and don't say things to hurt other kids.
Right. And then we've got the other parents that swear in front of their kids and they don't care what comes out of their mouth. And then their kids are learning all this behavior and they're taking it back out into the community.
And then we have the principal's office that is forced to tell these kids that are learning these behaviors at home that they're not right and that you need to be respectful to the other kids in the playground. You need to get along and you need to stop bullying, stop harassing. And these are the messages that we give our kids on a day-to-day basis. But they hear in the media from the Free Press Society that, oh, I'm an adult, so I should be able to say whatever I want, no matter who it hurts.
And then again, here we have adults again teaching children that it's all right to say what they want and to hurt people.
So we have a disconnect between the way we teach our children and then the way we act as adults. And I guess it's the old proverb, do as I say, not as I do.
Yeah, and that just doesn't work.
It doesn't work. And it doesn't work as a society, and it surely doesn't work in a school ground. And if we can get these messages through to the adults, maybe we wouldn't have the problems that we have on the schoolyards with the bullies and the bullying that, I mean, it's pretty much universal that it starts at home.
And this is still happening every day, the bullying in the school system here. I know in London, it's still happening at almost every school. There's bullying going on there.
Okay, so in final notes, and our final click is, why care about human rights? And we've got that for you now.
Who should be equal in dignity and rights? Who deserves to go to school without fear? Who should be allowed to wear what they want and not be beaten and whipped? Who should have access to clean and safe water? Who should be allowed to live as they were born without fear of reprisal? Who should be allowed to hold public office should they meet basic requirements, even if those people hold views counter to those of the current government? Who should have the right to peacefully oppose the sitting government, to report the news without interference? Who should have the right to form their own ideas and opinions, to be presented with the best knowledge of the day and not to be systematically lied to? Who has the right to the collected truths of the world? Who deserves to be protected and not attacked by their own police and military? Each and every one of us. Some habits are hard to break. Since people have been living together socially, there have been among us those who would limit others' lives to make their own easier and more comfortable. But the human will to freedom is strong, and so over the centuries of human progress, codes have been written and declarations have been made, all attempts to codify our collective morality. A way to say to those people who would tyrannize us and hold us down, these are the things that we find important. These things are non-negotiable. The Hammurabi Code, the Magna Carta, the Napoleonic Code, the American Bill of Rights, the Geneva Convention, and the International Bill of Human Rights, the European Convention of Human Rights, the European Social Charter, the African Charter of Human and People's Rights, the Helsinki Accords. All these documents increasingly sought to ensure the inalienable rights of the people it addressed. And now, just as in the past, the basic rights of people all over the world are under attack. So then, what should we do when we spot injustice somewhere in the world? Whether it is kids at school being bullied, or someone caught in an abusive relationship, or the actions of some government or group looking to subvert the rights of people on a whim or because of their interpretation of some ancient text. Should we simply turn our backs on those whose voices are muffled or silenced? No matter the injustice that you see, what ought one do? That is, what is the moral response to injustice? To me, turning a blind eye to such injustices is akin to supporting them. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., American pastor and civil rights leader, said it best when he said, "Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice." Those of us who can must help those who cannot. In my opinion, life is about seeking out truth and then acting in full knowledge of that truth. Over the past 150 years, science has demonstrated, from Darwin to Watson and Crick, what some of the more forward-thinking of us had long known or suspected, namely that all men are created equal. It is now our responsibility as an enlightened people, as a people with knowledge of truth, to act on that knowledge. We must question, inform, and attempt to raise the consciousness of those either ignorant or blind to the truth. There are those who do take action, particular defenders and organizations, and the work they do is under attack as well, because those who wield power are unmotivated to give it up. Journalists simply attempting to spread truth are jailed or killed every year in countries all over the world. To quote from the introduction to the Human Rights Watch's World Report 2010, it is time for a more vigorous governmental defense of human rights activists and institutions throughout the world. That requires standing up more firmly for the people and principles under attack, even when the attacker is an ally. It also requires seeing through these acts of retaliation to recognize and condemn them for what they are. It is no ordinary abuse to kill or arbitrarily detain a human rights defender, deregister a human rights organization, or attack an international human rights institution. It is a tacit confession of still greater abuse. Governments try to silence the messenger because they do not want the message heard. The surest way to reverse that censorship is to redouble efforts to redress the very abuses that these governments are seeking to hide from scrutiny. Thousands of people every year put their lives in jeopardy for the chance at a better life. A chance to live a life free of fear, oppression, and tyranny. A life full of all the rights and privileges that should be given to everyone. What can you do? Talk to your friends and family. Contact your government representative. Make a video. Donate to or become involved in a worthwhile organization. Things will change. We can make a difference.
And that's our show for today. I'm Michelle Boyce.
I'm Deborah Hamza.
And remember, when we talk about people's pursuit of happily ever after, every single member of our society has a happily ever after.
Well, we hope they do. Sometimes that doesn't happen.
Just remember that your happily ever after probably doesn't look like the person sitting beside you.
And you have to be compassionate when it doesn't look like that.
And if you're getting in the way of somebody's happily ever after, and happily ever after could simply be someone having to go to the bathroom right now, or it could be something more in depth that makes them happy operating their business, driving their car, happy getting along with their kids, going to skating, whatever is making them happy at the moment and they're happily ever after. If you're getting in the way of that, you might very well be violating the Human Rights Code.
Very well, they might be, yes.
So, everybody out there, you can pull our blogs at betweenthemargins.ca, www.betweenthemargins.ca. You can see all of our previous shows on that website, and we will blog all of the human rights and all of the other issues that you've heard about today on that show. And have yourself a healthy day.